Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
We have today as our guest Leon Bates, pianist, who is a graduate of Temple and has quite a career that he has been attending to. Welcome to Crossover, Leon.
Thank you very much.
We were chatting all along about what has happened to Temple since you attended here. But you are going to be a headliner, I guess, in a wonderful recital that is an opening recital of a series that is planned for the Baptist Temple, which has been renovated here
in
Temple.
Yes, looking forward to it very much. Certainly being back on the Temple campus again and bringing back a lot of old memories. Being able to contribute to the community here at Temple is something that I feel is very, very special. And I'm very much honored to be a part of the series. And I hope that this will be an ongoing one and they'll have plenty of success with it. But I think mine is the inaugural event.
And I think it's justified that you come and a successful alumnus of Temple, very successful. And we're going to talk about your career, which has been, I guess, thriving. I must say, though, when I took a look at Leon, he has lots of muscles and very well, you know, you're in very good shape. And I read in your biography that you are a weightlifter as well.
I'm involved with bodybuilding. That's true. And I have been for all of my adult life, beginning when I was actually here at Temple. It was when I first became interested in that whole process.
What spurred you on to that?
Passing through the athletic facilities and passing the weight room and seeing people in there working out. And deciding to go in and try it myself, and I've been at it ever since.
It's really quite helpful as a performer, I would think, as a pianist, certainly.
It really is. And, of course, those were not the reasons why I decided to get involved at, 18 years old. But as I got involved with it, I began to see that this was really, really something very, very much in direct parallel to what I was doing as a pianist. I mean, I was developing my skills and my abilities in a mechanical way to utilize my musical talent. But it was all about doing things in specified ways.
Okay.
And it's about repeating certain processes in the business of practicing daily and all of that. And that's a direct correlation with weight training, where you are working the muscles that we use every day,
right,
doing specific kinds of exercises designed to either pull or push different muscles within your body. And it's the practice of repeating over and over.
Well, that's what
things.
Musicians do. I mean, it's repetition,
right,
and drill, and exercise is constantly. They say, "What was it? If you don't, who was it that said it? Horowitz or Rubinstein? That it's if you don't play one, if you don't practice one day,
you notice
it. If you don't practice 2 days, your audience notices
right.
it."
Yeah, I think it was Rubinstein.
It must
right.
have been.
But I think that there's something to that. But there, I think, especially when you are young and you are studying music and you have many high flown ideas as far as seeing yourself as a performer, wanting to perform the pieces with the same degree of acumen that so many of the professionals do, a lot of times we think immediately about sitting down and playing just like what we hear or heard on recordings, rather than going through things in a methodical kind of method of slow practice and working out all of the details that are involved in the mechanics of a particular piece and how it's constructed. And that is the pathway to success in being able to play the pieces the way the professionals do. But when you're young, of course, and you have these visions in your mind, you want to jumpstart and you want to over so many of the steps in order to go down the road. And the interesting thing was that bodybuilding kind of crystallized a lot of that in my mind and made it a lot clearer. It was more basic in this physical endeavor.
It was more exposed.
Yeah. And so I began to look at it and think about it when I wasn't in the gym, and to realize that this was very, very similar. And maybe it was one of the reasons why I found I got into bodybuilding so easily, because I had had so many years of
practicing
on my instrument, you know.
And instruments, I might say, because we were chatting before the show, and you mentioned that you had played in, was it elementary school or high school?
Well, in high school, junior high and high school, I studied and played the tuba.
Well, that, I had said to Leon, I said, well, you needed your muscles to carry the tuba around.
Well, this is true, believe me, because it does get heavy after a while.
Well,
you know, this was not in the era of fiberglass tubas, certainly not in when I was in school. And so they were brass, and you carried them, and they were heavy.
Well, you know, I believe it was, is it Bill Bell or William Bell, who was a great, great tuba soloist. And his dream, he said, I think he played with the New York Philharmonic.
Mm-hmm.
And he said his dream was to have someone carrying his tuba for him.
Right. Well, it was funny because when I was in junior high school and I was just beginning to learn the instrument, I would carry a tuba home every day from school.
Dear.
And I walked to school, you know, and
yeah,
so I would carry, right. I would carry this instrument home. And, you know, there was a guy who lived about a half a block up the street from me. It was about my age. And, whenever he would see me coming down the street with his tuba, you know, he would kid me, you know, hey, where are you going with that portable toilet? You know?
Oh, dear. Well, you also play the sousaphone, which is another
incredible,
which for the audience is, it's that one with a tremendous bell.
With the big bell.
And it winds around.
Right.
You don't even see that now, do you, except in
Well, you do
bands.
See them. If you watch football games and you see the marching band on the halftime shows, although a lot of times they don't even show the halftime shows anymore. But sousaphones are still very popular and of course, extremely portable. When you think about it, when you have a marching band situation, and you need the low brass there to support all of the harmony that's being presented, but they're not visible in a way. But maybe the tuba isn't either to the average person on the street, you know, and they might wonder, well, what is that instrument?
Yeah. Well, the thing here is, though, how old were you when you started playing the piano?
I was just about 6 years old when I started
did that
piano.
Start?
Well, that started largely because of my kindergarten teacher, a woman who obviously appreciated music very much because she played recordings of music in our class all the time. So we heard all kinds of music. We heard you know, ensembles. We heard various kinds of solo music and that sort of thing. And so I remember being captivated with the sound of the piano on some recording that she played. And I also remember that Rachmaninoff's name was one of the first composers' names I ever identified with. My mother tells me about speaking to her about Rachmaninoff, you know, when I was 5 years old or something. And we did have an upright piano there
That's
in the classroom as well. So this reinforced everything because she invited us to play that instrument. She invited us to go up there and to sit and to feel the keys and to push them down. And she would let us all go up one by one. So we were each giving our own little performance, you know.
But you actually started studying seriously at
It was a direct. It was a direct result of that because I was excited about it, and you know, I went home, mommy, guess what I did today, and that sort of thing. And then every time we would go somewhere and there was a piano, I was on that piano and I was playing away. So my mother took the initiative and she found a teacher for me. And my parents are not musicians, so they didn't really necessarily know all of the ins and outs of that in those days. So my mother went to the newspaper and she found a very fine musician by the name of Christopher Sinjani, who ran a studio in the Germantown section.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went over and we talked to him and had our little interview and all of that. And I began taking lessons with Mr. Sinjani. And for the next 6 years, I worked with him on piano.
How old were you now?
From six, from the age of six, till 12.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Sinjani, interestingly enough, I think I can count the times that I ever saw him play the piano. But he was a very good instructor, and he knew how to teach. But he was also a very fine fiddle player.
Oh, dear. Don't tell me you.
Yes.
So you're a one-man band.
He would take out his fiddle. I'd finish my piano lesson. He would take out his fiddle. He would put the accompaniment on the piano. and then we would begin to play. So I would be sight reading these accompaniments.
Oh, my goodness. How wonderful.
You know? And the next step, of course, from that was that he begins to tell me now about the violin.
Oh, dear.
And the next thing, I'm taking violin lessons. So I'm going for a double lesson. I'm taking piano lessons, and I'm also taking a violin lesson.
You know? And then, of course, you got involved with the brass instruments.
And then I got involved with the brass instruments. So here it was. I was getting all of this information and funneling it all back into my own musical experiences and all of that. And it was just really a great way to grow up. I didn't wind up playing violin in school ensembles. But having an awareness of it, an awareness of how you produce the sound and all of that sort of thing has been tremendously valuable to me. But with the tuba, I got lots and lots of mileage out of that because I played in ninth grade, junior high school, wind ensemble. And then when I was at Germantown High School, I played in the concert band, mm-hmm. marching band, even played in all-city band, mm-hmm. you know. And then in college... I didn't play in any of the temple ensembles, but I did play in a rehearsal orchestra that met on Thursday nights, and it's called Symphony Club. And I don't know if it's still together or not, but we simply read symphonic literature.
Yes, it was a reading orchestra.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you know, and it was just the greatest thrill for me because I was, you know, it was always understood.
But
that
what
piano,
were you playing then?
Piano was my instrument, and that was.
But incidentally,
I would play the tuba in this orchestra.
Very interesting.
And it was a great experience to simply sit in and be one in the group, contributing to the overall sound.
But you never really wanted to pursue being an orchestral musician with that.
No, that was never in my mind.
Now, Natalie,
it was just about interest.
Natalie Henderis was your teacher, is
Natalie
that right
Natalie was
here?
My teacher here at Temple University. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I should mention that when I left Christopher Sinjani, my first teacher at the age of 12, I went to the Settlement Music School.
I see.
And that was the link between my first years and my time here at Temple. So, at Settlement, I was with a wonderful woman by the name of Irene Beck, and she was a tremendous teacher and wonderful pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one who prepared me then for tutelage under, Natalie Henderis, right.
So you really had a very, very varied and fruitful, I guess, childhood. I mean, in terms of growing up with music and, as you say, learning, you know, the whole spectrum of how things are put together. It is rather odd that you chose to make your career as a solo pianist. I mean, you know, this is a decision.
Well, it really is a decision, and interestingly enough, I think what helped the process was my first teacher, Mr. Sinjani, was very, very good at bringing his students together for little musicales mm-hmm. and things. Sometimes on Saturday mornings we would gather together. And interestingly enough, now he taught me violin. He also played mandolin. He played guitar. And he had those students in his studio mm-hmm. as well. He also taught accordion. An accordion, which you hardly see these days, but he had many accordion students. And my mother has photographs at home of some of those Saturday morning sessions when we'd all be gathered together, and there would be me and perhaps another pianist, and there would be these guitar players mm-hmm. and mandolins and all, and
one,
we would
was
all
an orchestra.
He would transcribe music and have mm-hmm. us all playing together. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, you were a lucky child, I have to
very
say.
Very much so.
Very lucky. And but now tell us the professional aspect of what you were doing once you decided to make being a solo pianist your career.
Well,
you graduated from Temple?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really kind of similar to the experience for many people who study and have some very, very good experiences as performers at an early age. I mean, I appeared in public for the first time when I was about 7 years old, and then very regularly every year after that.
So it was a way of life.
It was a way of life, and I became very comfortable with the idea of being on stage and performing and all of that, and really looked forward to it very much. So by the time I was about 12 or 13 years old, I was hooked. I mean, this is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the good fortune in my life was that I had the people in my life
who would help
me do that. And, of course, my parents, I have to give a tremendous amount of credit before taking the initiative to get me started, getting me to lessons, buying music, doing all of those kinds of things. But having the right teachers in place.
Well, I've always said that. Yeah.
Who can motivate you and inspire you. And certainly, Mr. Sanjani was a wonderful teacher and gave me a great background in the rudiments. Irene Beck was the one who began to give me a vision down the road to what could be and to talk to me about, great pianists and play recordings for me. And she was from Warsaw.
Really?
And,
okay.
Her father, had been a trumpet player in the Warsaw Philharmonic.
Uh-huh.
And she came to the United States and began to play. As a matter of fact, I have an old recording of her performing on WQXR
in
1948, I think. Mm-hmm. But she was a very fine musician and, interestingly enough, an excellent teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She was very generous with her time and her information. And many times I'd go for lessons, it's supposed to be about an hour, and I'm there for an hour and a half, whatever.
So you graduated from Temple, and then you
graduated
did you start
from
concertizing?
Temple, and actually had started to get some opportunities to concertize, even as a student. Because I entered, for instance, Music Teachers National Association. They have a competition that they do every year.
Yeah, well, you won some.
I won that
things.
One. That would have been when I was, a sophomore in college. And I was also a winner of the Philadelphia Orchestra Senior Student
Concerts. Yes.
And a competition sponsored by the National Association of Negro Musicians.
Yes.
So there were a number of things that kind of put the spotlight on me and gave me opportunities. And I was invited to give recitals even in my college years.
So were you actually, you had a professional career. I mean, it's really something because
it was the beginning of it.
One thinks of, the grooming that is required nowadays. You have your whiz kids that are, they're coming out and they're just, knocking your socks off with the technique and so on and concertizing very, very early. Leon Bates is a native of Philadelphia. He began his formal study, of course, at a very early age. And among his career highlights was his performance with Lauren Mazel in the Orchestra of France and his being chosen to play at Carnegie Hall in the Steinway Foundation's Gala Celebration. He also performed at La Scala in Milan and with the Bournemouth Symphony in England, among many other things, including summer festivals. Mr. Bates will be performing in recital at the Baptist Temple on October 7th.
Perhaps I should say a little bit about what I'm going to play on the 7th.
Yes.
It is a program that's very varied, opening with Mozart's C minor fantasy, and then moving on to the second piano sonata, the Funeral March Sonata of Frederick Chopin. And then after the intermission, there is a piece called Engrams by the African-American composer Arthur Cunningham.
Okay.
And that'll be followed by two works of Maurice Ravel, Jeu d'eau, and the wonderful Gaspard de la Nuit.
Wonderful. Well, it's certainly a challenging program.
It certainly is that.
Well, I'm going to let you go home and practice now.
All right. Wonderful.
Delight to see you, and hopefully we'll see you at the concert on the 7th. Thank you,
Leon.
Thank you
so much. It's been a pleasure.